All right. Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Plantaholic, the plant podcast where Taylor, not me, but the other host, and I, Tori, the one talking, current host, talk about plants and everything to do with plants.
Everything.
Do you have any examples of what we've talked about?
For
those
yeah.
who haven't heard about us before?
Yeah, if you take a look back, we recently discussed the cut flower industry. That was a three-part installation that
loved it.
Was kind of fun. yeah, otherwise, just kind of some random topics. We often discuss various alcohols that contain a plant ingredient or, you know, botanical names and mummification, like all kinds of random. When we say anything plant related, we mean it.
We really do. We're trying to cover everything.
We're stretching this as far as we possibly can to just include whatever the hell we like.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yes. But today we're doing a little segment of famous gardens. Mm-hmm. And today we are going to discuss the Garden of Cosmic Speculation. Mm-hmm. So this is probably, okay, I haven't been there, just a full disclosure. Yes, but I would hazard to say that this is my favorite garden.
I think I would put it on my top five, actually, and I haven't even been there yet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll get into it as much as we possibly can, but it is just an amazing concept. Absolutely spectacular. First, why don't we start off with our planter action of the week for both of us and kind of see what where we can go from there. I can start us off if
yes, please.
Do that.
I need to think of a better one. Mine sucks.
Hey, it is what it is.
Life just gives you lemons and sometimes you ignore the lemons.
Or you forget about the lemons.
Or you forget that lemons were in your life that week and you have nothing to talk about.
Well, for me this week, I was entertained. My dad texted me and we have a Prunus serrasifera, which is a technically a decorative species of plum, not a edible. I mean, not edible, but it's not known for its fruit.
Yeah.
It gets these tiny kind of cherry-like fruits on it, but most of the time they're only like maybe a half inch wide, and I'm sure most of that is the pit, you know, like of the anyway. So anyway, he texted me, he's like, "Hey, I've been eating the plums off of this tree," and I'm like, "Are you alive? Like, what's going on?" Anyway, so I looked it up, and I guess every like few years or so, it's actually common where the fruits actually get a little larger than normal, so they're almost an inch in diameter, as opposed to the typical, like, again, maybe half inch, maybe even smaller. Like, I've never...
Yeah, they're pretty small.
Yeah, let's just say I've never had the desire to, like, pick one and try it. Like, it just never has crossed my mind. So anyway, he entertained me a little bit with that. And I did try one the other day, and it wasn't bad. It was a little sour, and I can't taste sour things, so that's kind of saying something.
Wow. That thing must have been pure sour. Like, worse than a, what is it, the soured, I don't know, brain?
Sour patch kids?
No, those don't count. Those aren't sour.
They are not sugar. Sour.
It's like sour. It's got the pucker guy. Oh. The guy who's like got that
I know
face.
What you're talking about, and I have no idea what it is.
I don't know what they're called. They're like sour puckers, sour brain, sour punch kids.
Yeah.
Not that.
I don't know if sour, maybe it was like bitter. I don't know. I think it was like mostly skin because of how small it was, and that's why it was kind of, anyway. It was okay. Wouldn't like write home about it, but anyway, that's
talk
that
about
was
on
my...
a podcast though.
Yeah, that I guess it was worth something, but anyway, I was just very surprised that randomly, like every 3 years, this tree might produce
that is
something
pretty
edible
though.
Yeah,
I guess I came up with a little bit better plant interaction.
Oh, all right,
kind of on the same page, actually. You inspired me.
Oh, so, thank you.
Or I guess your dad inspired you to inspire me.
That's true.
Whatever the strange
there was a chain of events.
Path of travel led to this.
Yes.
But Costco, my Costco is doing samples again, which is a little scary.
Yep.
But I ate them anyways because...
Because they're free.
They're free food, and I couldn't help myself. I am a mess. But they were handing out these plum things.
Oh.
They were like part plum, part nectarine, and they had the weirdest name. But they tasted pretty good.
Oh.
I didn't buy them, but I tasted them.
That's all you needed.
That's all that was how I interacted with the plate. I mean, I was inside all week, so the fact that I got that much in is saying something.
That's
I already
that's
used
something.
Grass, so I couldn't use that again. I can't use watching Gotta my
vary
Costco
it a little
every
bit.
Single time.
So. Yes, that's true. That's true.
That's where I'm at.
That is kind of the standard of boring things. So.
Yes. Or Tori's life.
Watching grass grow.
Yes.
That's the standard.
Plumarines, or whatever they're called.
Yeah, I actually kind of want to know what they're called now.
I know. I'll go back and
yeah,
I'll tell you. I'll
right.
buy them. They were good enough to buy. I just
okay.
Didn't
good to
come
know.
Back with their real names, not my made up ones.
That might help too.
Yes. That's how factual I am.
Right. Speaking of facts, I have some fun facts about the Garden of Cosmic Speculation to start us off.
Wonderful.
Just to pique some interest here. So the garden is actually only open one day a year. So it is a private residence. It's the residence of Maggie Keswick. It was kind of their home estate, or their family estate, I guess, and her husband, Charles Jenks. So that was, you know, very limited, I guess, as far as the access to the public, which I guess, you know, it's legitimate. It's their house.
I think that's a good thing. It really limits your visitation time.
Yeah. Anyway, that with COVID, they've been closed as well. So we'll see. Oh. One day, that is my goal in life is to.
I hope they open back up.
Yeah, me too. It would
that's
be a real
my
shame.
Worst fear.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, only open one day a year. There was a composer, Michael Gandolfi, who created a tribute to the garden, an entire composition dedicated to this garden, and it was nominated for the 2009 Grammys. Also, it's a 30-acre garden, like 40 sub-gardens, I guess, within the garden. The whole thing is located in Dumfries, Scotland. The again, like I mentioned, the owners and designers of the garden are Charles Jenks and Maggie Keswick. They were married. Maggie actually passed away from cancer in 1995, kind of just when they were starting to design the garden and build it. But a lot of that kind of went into the actual kind of influenced the project, obviously, like her widow is kind of the one who continued. Is it widow if it's the man? Is that the same? I feel like there's another word.
Widower?
I don't know. Anyway.
It should be. I don't think we need to make it that way.
Yeah, I don't know why. I feel like widow is very question. Feminine, but maybe
I'm
that's...
I'll look it up.
Okay. I'll keep going.
I'll get back.
All right. one of the other influences of the garden, Maggie was actually partly raised in Shanghai. So a lot of her influence comes from Chinese gardens that she grew up with. She also became a landscape designer and wrote a book on Chinese gardens as well. So there's a lot of that. You'll see a lot of that influence in the actual designs. And it's not obvious, but when you know a little bit about Chinese garden design, you'll definitely see some elements, which I'll touch on briefly. But those were my fun facts, just to.
And then I have a fact clarification.
Oh,
I actually was correct.
Oh,
a
good.
Widower is a male widow, and the widow is female.
Really?
I totally guessed.
That's awesome.
I can't believe I got that right.
Yeah, dang. I would not have guessed that. It sounds very...
I don't get why we had to add that extra at the end, but...
Yeah, I thought it... I don't know what I thought the difference between those two words was, but that's not what I would have guessed.
I think I was thinking that it was like a tense thing. Like, oh, right, right. He was a widow, but and then like
a widower.
Later, he was a widower. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what that would be, but
yeah.
That's kind of what I was thinking too.
I don't know. That's kind of where, but I just guessed. That's only, but I was right. That's amazing.
I love it. All right. So just kind of diving in. I kind of wanted to just do a brief overview of the garden and kind of go over what the sort of design concept was behind this whole thing. So one of the reasons, I mean, the reason I love it so much is it's the whole thing was based on modern cosmology, meaning like the science of the cosmos, not cosmetology. I always feel like those are way too close together. Yeah. Don't know how that happened. I'm not an entomologist.
You're
somewhere
not?
Along the road. No, I'm not.
I think we confused a ton of people.
But yeah, anyway, so very, very, very based in various scientific discoveries and just the advancements that were happening even at the time. So the garden actually started construction in 1988. So even as they were kind of building the whole gardens, which I believe ended in the early 2000s, like it took some time. Like this is a 30 acre space.
Right.
So definitely a lot of work went into this, but also a lot of scientific discoveries were happening at the time. So it was really interesting. Just again, I should preface this. A lot of this comes from a book, Charles Jenks, again, the husband, the widower.
Widower.
Not widow.
Widower.
who had a huge hand in designing these gardens. He wrote a book just called The Garden of Cosmic Speculation, which goes over, again, the design processes as well as just everything that went into building this garden, a lot of background information. I was telling Tori before we did this, I 100% forgot I wrote an essay on this garden in college. So I was able to at least shorten my research a little bit by quoting myself a little bit in this. So
if I don't say so myself.
Exactly. I did base it on the same book back in the day, so not much has changed, but it just helped me summarize this a little bit more efficiently, which will be shocking as much as I'm going to talk now. But trust me, this is as efficient as I can be.
We've done three-parters in the past.
Exactly. So. I am definitely learning from our experience here. Yeah. So generally, again, just the 100% the goal of this garden, to quote Charles Jenks specifically, was to celebrate nature and our delight in it. While also, end quote, but he also goes on, it's a very wordy book, so I'm summarizing.
Read a book.
I tried. Yeah. I told you very explicitly if you want to get more detail, because he goes, it's a very good book. But again, just to paraphrase, they also were really concerned about kind of creating an awareness of these various scientific discoveries and advancements in cosmology. I feel like I'm going to say cosmetology by accident. But he really, one of his concerns and something that I'm really kind of aware of as well is how scientists and just kind of recent, like especially scientific papers and things like that, how very ineptly that they get relayed to the public. You know, it's an entire language all of its own as far as, you know, how scientific papers are structured, how they're written, how just their
like
wording.
Law.
Like exactly.
It's like a different language. You're like, what the F?
Oh, 100%.
Not do.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, it could be something that's either fairly straightforward or, you know, something that's not super complicated and is very important it could be important to a lot of people, but just the way it's often phrased or kind of presented, a lot of people feel intimidated, you know, by that kind of language, or they just literally can't understand it, and which is 100% understandable because it's a lot of jargon. So that was a big kind of cause of his, like just trying to sort of relate in a physical way what these various discoveries are, and just these concepts. and being able to express them in an artistic kind of way. Because one of his things is like, you know, science is not really broken into the artistic realm as much. And I do think that's changing. I do want to kind of preface, this book was written in 2003. And I do think a lot of progress has been made as far as, you know, making science a little bit more digestible to the public. Still a long way to go. But I know there's like people who literally have careers of science communication. You know, there's definite, you know, sort of, I think even social media to a point plays a part in that, as far as just, you know, right, kind of simplifying things and making it more. Exactly. Yeah. He's a great example. Yeah. That's literally his job, is science communication, you know, but he's still a scientist, and but you know, his main focus is getting that information across in a more digestible way. So again, that it's definitely changed since this book was written, but that was a really big, kind of cause of Charles Jenks's was to kind of, make a visually appealing and pleasant experience like a typical garden, but also kind of using that as a method of education and exposure to these very complex scientific issues, right, or discoveries and things like that.
It's like an adult children's garden.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Like, he gets into like, I wasn't going to go over this, but like in one of the gardens, he created like this game, like, oh, of how, like, with the dice that you would actually play in the garden with, like, these various sculptures and things, uh-huh, like that. It was very convoluted. I do not know if anyone ever played it, but, like, it was like, whoa, dude, like, you are going above and beyond here.
Right. I only have a day.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you're doing all this for a garden that people only see for a day? Like, oh my gosh, you're insane.
I mean, it's gonna take me a day to figure this game out.
I mean, I 100% relate, because I do the same thing with parties. It's like, it's all for me. Like, oh, yeah. I do it all just to entertain myself.
I would be in that guard just playing the game by myself.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But so the just kind of some of the concepts that are explored in these gardens include supersymmetry, quantum mechanics, DNA structures, even super string theory, and just kind of the overall origin of the universe. Like, it gets deep. And again, like I was saying, I wrote this essay. It was actually for our Healing Gardens class, and I related it back to like a spiritual garden, which is something that basically to be considered a spiritual garden has to kind of base the concepts in a some sort of shared belief system, or like, right, some sort of like culturally understood set of beliefs, as well as just having something that makes you kind of question your place in the universe. And I can't think of a better garden that does that than this garden.
Seriously,
honestly,
just the word string theory alone would just make me.
Oh my
what
gosh!
What am I? But I went down a ball of string.
I went down so many rabbit holes just reading, like, on one of the 40 segments in this garden made me go back to my physics days and my obsession, and looking up supersymmetry again, and like, oh man, I will not bore you guys with that, but oh man, it's physics is absolutely fascinating.
Disturbing. It's, I summarize it, call it magic. That's how.
Oh,
I
yeah.
100%. Put it in a box, put a label, just magic.
Totally magic.
Don't look inside of it.
Exactly.
Oh,
anyway, I did want to list all of the gardens real quick because I think it's hilarious.
Go for it.
I'm just going to do it super fast because it entertains me. Okay. Mm-hmm. Portrack, Black Hole Terrace, Octagonia, Symmetry Break Terrace, Soliton Waves, Linear Paradise Garden, Universe Cascade, Wave Gates, Snake Mound, Snail Mound, Sense of Fair Play, Siamese Twins, Universe, Gaia, Adam, Common Sense, New Kitchen Garden, Six Senses and DNA, Two Ways to Paradise, Hell, Fractal Terrace, Wave Fence, Slug Lakes, Portrack Castle, Jumping Bridge, Willow Twist, Witch's Brooms, Devil's Teeth, Quark Walk, Black Pond, The Nonsense, Taking Leave of Your Senses, Water Dragon, and Isle Tower.
Oh my god. Take a ride at hell and you'll make it to the Witch's Broom.
Exactly.
And find yourself at Cascade Waves.
Yeah. So even I'm in those names. Literally.
Yeah. I'll meet you in hell for lunch.
Yeah. Sounds great. Bring a picnic.
Yeah.
It'll be fantastic.
Make sure it's a dark menu. We've got a new kitchen garden to hit on the
menu. Hit the kitchen garden, go to hell. Hell's kitchen.
Hell's kitchen. There you go.
But just from some of those names, you can kind of see there's a little more at play. Like, again, Maggie was raised in Shanghai, so she had a little bit of Buddhist influence, but she was also raised in Scotland, so she had a lot of Catholicism influence from her family. So there's a lot of sort of a dichotomy or something that kind of a combination of those things. And she sort of became agnostic in her later life just from hearing all of these things, but kind of more of a spiritual path than it was, you know, a religious path necessarily, but still able to kind of incorporate these kind of traditional Chinese concepts in the garden. This includes the kind of curves of the landscape. So one of the more iconic sites, if you guys definitely look up pictures as you're listening.
We'll show
to this.
Some on our Instagram.
We will for sure. But the topography is probably the most iconic of the site. There's the snake garden is literally like a, if you look from above, that's where you can really see it, but it does look like a snake. In Chinese gardens, circle actually symbolize heaven, and curves are often utilized to ward off evil. And then there's also Chinese geomancy, which is kind of an animalistic metaphor, which actually uses curves to represent dragons, usually like a wave pattern. Was used to symbolize dragons in Chinese landscapes. So there is an actual wave garden, again, to kind of use that that sort of concept. And there's a lot of landforms there. There's one that's actually in double helix shape to represent DNA. And everything in this garden has like 15 like layered meanings. Like there's nothing simple going on here. Even very typical in Chinese gardens, rock formations are very, very crucial. Like they'll need to pick the perfect rocks to be in a Chinese garden, and people will spend crazy amounts of money for this. The Huntington Gardens, like we discussed last week, is a very good example of this. They literally shipped in rocks from China for their Chinese garden in the Huntington Gardens. But in this case, they're just saying there are typically five unique rock formations in Chinese gardens, and that's supposed to symbolize the five sacred mountains in China. Similarly, the Garden of Cosmic Speculation has actual five main areas in the landscape, and it also has five major landforms or mounds in the landscape. So that's another reference to kind of the Chinese garden background. But still, it's a very, very spiritual garden, despite the very scientific, you know, undertones of all of the design influences. It's still very much rooted in kind of a spiritual sense. So I chose to kind of just briefly go over three of the major gardens, probably somewhat the most iconic of the sites, not necessarily, but the three of my favorites that I was really interested in and wanted to get into a little bit more detail with you guys. And you guys can look at your own research and kind of see all the crazy various gardens in this landscape. Yeah. But these three, I really, I think kind of epitomize like the sort of ethos and general sense of these gardens. So I want to go over the Black Hole Terrace, the Six Senses and DNA Garden, and the Universe Cascade. These three are just fascinating to me. So kind of starting with the Black Hole Terrace. So it's an abstraction of the concept of a black hole. Charles Jenks was really just kind of admired the very accurate metaphorical name of black hole. So essentially a black hole, all light, all matter is sucked into these entities, leaving only black, and the implosive force creates a hole in space and time. so that's, it's very literal, very to the point, and he very much appreciated this concept. So in the garden, again, looking at a photo will be much more helpful than my description, mm-hmm. but essentially it's a very wide outline curve, and it's on a kind of a slope, and the landscape kind of angles you as you walk in, pulling you towards the center of their representative black hole, which in this case is a aluminum structure. That it kind of is like a checkerboard pattern, but the checkerboard sort of spirals into the center of this again representative black hole. Yeah. And there's also adjacent to that, there's a spiraling sculpture that almost looks like a DNA helix, but it's actually a representative of how stars are formed, which they actually come from the actual vortex of the black hole. Black holes are what create universes, essentially. So they're spinning and spinning, and they sort of spit out stars, and they fling them out, and that's how the universe is created.
As well as species of flowers.
Hey.
If you just fling it around, you'll make a star lily.
Exactly. Much like the seed.
Yes.
So yeah, they're kind of playing off this idea of, you know, kind of under normal conditions, we sort of see space as flat. You know, if you look at the horizon, it looks flat. But in reality, you know, when we're spinning around a massive object, such as the sun in our case, really everything is bent very considerably. And similarly to a black hole, you know, both space and time are swallowed up. And, you know, that's something, if you've ever seen sort of the proposed sort of structure of a black hole, that's very similar as far as the curvature. And again, it's just something to kind of express this in some sort of visual way, which is, again, just very fascinating and as a general concept, but it's really cool to look at in the photos that I've seen of this garden.
I didn't know that about black holes.
Yeah, I learned a lot about black holes this week. I also learned that some people speculate that on the other side of the black hole is something called a white hole, which the matter that is sucked in is expelled and kind of transformed into something else. You know, it's just sort of a conversion of the energy into something else. So
like recycling.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's very, very hard to conceptualize in your head. Like, again, it's
this
like,
is why you go to magic. The garden.
Yeah, exactly.
Or call it magic and live at a kindergarten level understanding of science. Like,
Oh, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard to imagine. Like, we're in a relatively small universe, and in the middle of our universe is a black hole. Mm-hmm. And that's what created it, but is also keeping it kind of spinning.
Moving. Yeah.
Anyway, it's...
Yeah. Why are we going to space? It's only just too big.
I know, right? It's like, oh man, like that is too terrifying to me to contemplate.
There's just no point.
Oh, so scary.
Everything keeps going. We'll never reach the end.
Nope. Nope. Not okay. Nope. I've never had a desire to go to space. I can tell you that right now.
I have absolutely no desire to... stars are pretty.
Oh, yeah.
That's
from
about
here.
This is about as close as I want to get to space.
Pretty much.
That's maybe a plane ride.
Yes. Yes. Much more manageable.
Yeah.
Before I move on to the Garden of Six Senses and DNA, how about we take a little break?
That sounds great.
We'll come right back. All right. Welcome back, everyone. Are you ready? I didn't ask you.
I'm ready. I'm just chewing in the back.
Okay. That's cool.
I'll stay away from the mic.
This is usually our, like, snack/beverage break. So if you hear ice randomly and Tori is drinking what looks like two Marmo moss balls in a glass, but I learned they're limes.
Fresh lime. I just put the whole lime in my drink.
It is a sight to behold, let me tell you.
It's green.
Very much so.
I don't put a slice of lime.
Mm-mm.
I cut a lime in half, squeeze both ends, and just drop them in.
Hey, it works.
It's water.
Yep. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
All right. Jumping back in, we've got the Garden of Six Senses and DNA. Unrelated.
We just talked about taste.
Yes.
Water.
Exactly. Wait. Oh, yeah. There's only five senses. You know, I didn't look into that.
Isn't there like a new sense or something?
Oh,
no,
that's
true.
I
thought there were six senses.
No, I'm pretty sure the movie The Sixth Sense was supposed to be like, you know, supernatural.
Maybe that's why I think there's six.
It's so ingrained into our culture now.
I feel like I accidentally referenced it without knowing. I don't think I've ever seen that movie.
Oh, I have. Oh, I actually saw it before the plot had been spoiled for me, even though it was only like 10 years ago.
I knew the ending.
I did not.
Yeah.
It did surprise me.
It still got me, though. Still got me. It was still, it's well enough done that even if you know the ending.
Yeah, it was still a good movie. Oh, Bruce. He's the best. All right. So the six senses and DNA, they took up the plot of land in this area and separated it into six different garden areas. So it's supposed to explore the various stages of DNA, as well as the importance of our senses. So each of the six plots contain a central sculpture, and then the surrounding plants are actually meant to be representative of various organelles of the cell. And they also reference whatever sense was represented in the sculpture. So, for example, the one that sort of represents a sense of touch, it has the DNA structure, also with a hand to kind of represent the touch. And then they just have plants with kind of interesting textures, like lamb's ears, you know, stuff like that, where it's more of that sort of sense experience. So each DNA structure, each of these sculptures show DNA in various forms. So just like the typical double helix, and then you've got DNA in the midst of transcription. All of these different sculptures kind of illustrate different stages of DNA. So this was actually inspired by Maggie's cancer. When they're researching, you know, just kind of, you know, as you do when you're diagnosed with something. They actually revisited this garden after her death, and it became the inspiration for these DNA sculptures and whatnot. And they also used, which I did not remember this term, ambigrammy, yeah. Which is the text can be read the same upside down as well as right side up. So it's the same no matter which way you flip it.
Oh, wait. Upside down you can read it?
Uh-huh. I think the best example I've seen of this, and
LOL.
This is probably... Oh, yeah, yeah. That would be. But there's actually like it's a graphic design technique where... they can take any word, essentially. I actually had to do this in an art class.
Oh, okay.
There's like font generators that do this for you now online.
Oh.
But it's the first time I saw it and it really stuck out to me was when we bought The Princess Bride on DVD. Because they had a picture of her and Wesley, and then it was like a lake,
right?
And then it was like a mirror image, and then the Princess Bride, the words the Princess Bride could be read both right side up and upside down. That was the first time I've ever seen.
So how
that.
Do you do now? I'm just
it's
off
it's
right
really
now.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's a cool concept. Again, there's font generators that do it
right.
for you, but it's a very. I feel like your mind would have to work in a very. Specific way, like Dimitri Martin,
right?
Or, you know, like he would be the person to come up with that crap. Like,
yeah, I don't know how you could go about figuring that out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, just turn
yeah.
around, move
yeah.
your head.
But like, you said, LOL is a good example. That would be without any manipulation.
Right.
That would be the same thing.
And to think, I
but
came
in
up
this
with
case,
that right away. I'm an amigrammer.
Yeah,
look at me.
Hey.
It's not a real word, but
hey, you know, Yeah, anyway, if you look at some of the words in the garden that were used were like ambiguity. And it was really interesting, like if you're looking at photos of the garden, like it almost is like an hourglass shape of the letters. But also if you flip it one way or the other, like the A turns into the Y, so it's like very loopy.
Oh, I see.
And then when you look at it the other way, it becomes a Y or an A, depending on which direction you're looking at it. Anyway, it's a very cool concept. I don't know how you would figure that out from a non-font generator perspective.
No idea.
But it's a very cool way to do that. So that was kind of their way. It was supposed to represent how DNA and cells communicate with one another.
Right.
So again, everything has so many layers of meaning in this garden. It's like so much going on here.
Why is it only, I need more than a day to just mentally understand a single aspect of this garden.
And this is only three gardens.
Yeah. Like, Jesus.
I've only gone over two.
Oh my God, I'm overwhelmed.
And there's 40.
Oh my God.
Anyway, it's amazing. The last garden I did want to go over was the Universe Cascade. I think this is my favorite visually, although the black hole is pretty damn
That's
cool.
Great.
But I think visually and conceptually, the Universe Cascade is my favorite. Again, haven't been there, but just looking at photos, it's pretty freaking cool.
It's definitely, I think, one of the most iconic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That one and the black hole one, I think, are the two I'm
visually. Yeah. Yeah. I think that and just like the kind of the double helix mound are kind of the most common images associated with it. But yeah, definitely an iconic feature of the garden. So the Universe Cascade, it's essentially a staircase when it all is said and done. But it comes down from the library of the property. So there's this huge slope. And it's a series of kind of crossing and split steps that actually end at a pool, which is at the, well, pool pond, I guess, is a better description. There's a pond at the very base. And the pond at the very base of the structure is supposed to represent the origin of the universe, or the primordial soup, I guess, would be one way to describe that.
I love soup.
Yes. Probably would not be a very delicious soup.
This is what I add to the scientific description. I like soup. Soup is good. I like soup.
I mean, of all the soup, it's probably the most important soup. Yeah. So there is
I don't
that.
Know. Have you had French onion? Life changing.
One might say universe changing. Oh my
Sorry.
God.
This is
You're good.
Where I am mentally.
I'm right there with you now. I want soup. So basically as you walk up the steps, so there's kind of a single sort of rickety looking step system that goes from the base of the pond up to almost midway up to the slope. So as you travel up the steps, more and more time passes by, as far as representative time, until you reach modern times, which is the 12.9999999999 billion years from the creation of the universe, where our modern society, is located in the big scheme of things.
The good old days.
Exactly. What was kind of interesting, again, they're kind of talking about how, obviously science keeps advancing, we keep learning new things, and during this project, right when they kind of finalized the conception of this universe cascade, scientists announced, like, oh, we thought the universe was 15 billion years old, now we realize it's 13 billion years old. So they kind of had to make some adjustments. But it was so cool. So the shape of the staircase, so again, it starts at the pool, and then the single line of steps goes about midway up, and then it kind of branches out sort of like a vase shape, almost, where the stairs slowly meander outwards in both directions until it reaches the very top. And the actual shape of the staircase is actually supposed to represent the shape of our universe. which is not something that we, you know, obviously we don't have a photograph of the whole, you know, sort of shape and conceptualization of that. But there's actually something called the anthropic principle, which hypothesizes this vase shape, which is based on the model of a light cone. So it all has to do, it got very convoluted when I was researching it, but it's like how time travels on the on a y-axis. And that's how they sort of based it on this.
Okay. Kind of like a wave. How our, kind of.
Yeah. So that's how they hypothesize this vase shape.
Right.
And that, again, that's what they use to create this structure, as far as not only representing the time, but also the actual shape of our universe. Mm. So within this shape, there are 25 separate landings or different sections, that is representative of a jump in evolutionary time.
Oh, wow.
So it's not necessarily a steady, directional of time, but, again, the pool below is supposed to represent the very first origin, the superstring theory, and just going up through the millions and millions of years. It includes events such as when the first stars were created, and at 9.1 billion years when the first life appeared, 9.2 billion years when DNA appeared, all the way up to the present. Even the modern economy where we're kind of threatening our environment is mentioned at the 12.99999 billion year mark.
Wow. They're keeping it updated. Dang.
Yes, very much so.
Where's COVID on this scale?
There's even a future mark. So, hey, like we're probably at that point where we've destroyed the world and the seawater is at 90 degrees all of a sudden. Safe,
but everything else exploded. Wow, that is
absolutely
so cool.
Crazy.
I did not know they were keeping it updated. That's awesome.
Well, I mean, that's like part of the 13, you know.
Oh, yeah.
In the big scheme of things, we are at that 12.9999 billion year mark. And there's also a combination of like a water, I don't want to say waterfall, but kind of a water feature that cuts through the steps.
Okay.
And there's also strategic planting as well as benches every so often just to kind of slow you down and make you kind of experience the different pathways and again, just sort of conceptualize our very tiny, tiny place in this crazy timeline. So it's pretty cool, especially the steps that are closer to the bottom. There's so what looks like almost like a crack in the middle, that's supposed to represent this, or have the water that runs down from the top all the way down to the base of the pool.
Right.
And one of the other things that's present throughout the gardens, not just this one, they're really fascinated with scale and microcosms and macrocosms, which is sort of like a miniaturization of nature. And that's very, very common, at least I know in Japanese gardens. That's a very, very common concept in Chinese gardens as well, which is probably more their background. But that's something you'll see a lot. Like, again, even just talking about Chinese gardens that I mentioned earlier, there's usually some sort of rock formation to represent the five major mountains in China. Same thing in Japan. There's usually rock formations to represent the islands.
Right. And the sand is like the sea.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Like
exactly.
Scaled down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the Zen.
Right.
Karen Kansui or the Zen Garden is very much probably like the iconic example of a microcosm sort of garden space. So that's something they're really interested in. So each platform, which again represents these various evolutionary steps, has some sort of rock or boulder sculpture at each of these points that kind of represents whatever stage of evolution they're talking about. And he actually, Charles, most of them were actually hand collected by him himself. Oh. And even the type of rock he considered that wasn't symbolic of that particular stage of evolution. Mm-hmm. So it's just all these, like, again, many layers and all these things that were going into this. But anyway, that's kind of that final garden. And just this one quote kind of stood out to me of his description of the 25th step, which is kind of the present, you know, or the future of our time on this planet. And he just mentioned that going back again to the more philosophical section of these gardens, but he said religions trapped in doctrine have lost their imaginative stimulus. And science has yet to produce a creative high culture, but the potential for understanding exists. So I thought that was a pretty good summary of kind of what his intention was. Kind of, again, sort of that contrast with the very spiritual aspects of the garden, you know, almost religious aspects of the garden, mixed in with the more modern, you know, concept of science and sort of marrying the two to sort of find where we are in the universe and represent that in a more artistic way or more palatable way for the general public.
Right.
So that was kind of an interesting, very interesting take, and something that, I mean, if I can create in my lifetime anything even like remotely close to this, like, that would be awesome. Right. Like, that's the only thing I would need.
If,
like, in my landscape career. Exactly. Or if I can create it for someone else, like, that's
if
cool
they
too.
They have a lot of money.
Exactly. Yeah. That is definitely key to this project.
I really hope they open back up. That would be.
Yeah, I know.
I think it's a really important garden to have.
I agree.
And it's very,
I really hope that's
unique, and I think it's iconic because of what it's doing, what it's trying to do.
Definitely. I ended my essay with this quote from Charles Jenks, and he said, "What is a garden if not a celebration of our place in the universe?" Like,
perfect.
I agree, Charles.
You got this, Charles.
You go, Charles.
Keep it up.
Hell yeah. Anyway, that's what I've got.
Awesome. Well,
definitely a lot more to discuss, but a lot of philosophical and very scientific questions to ponder.
Yep, I feel small.
Right?
Insignificant, useless. This is what my therapy is supposed to be against. it'll be fine.
I mean, it's definitely how you interpret it.
Yes.
Because, you know, if you consider how much went into just your existence,
oh,
it's like,
yeah.
That's also very incredible.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Taylor. I am incredible.
Yeah.
I did this for
good.
You.
Good. Exactly. You earned this spot.
I've earned this spot in this place and time.
But yeah, I guess all that's left is to have a little pun off here. If we want to bring
it
home.
Yeah, see how well.
I'll see if I actually think of something this time. That would be cool.
I felt bad. I felt like I just kept.
No. Don't. I need to up my game. I was going into this really confident, like, and I was just shut down. Like, I thought I was good under pressure, but I was mistaken.
You're too amused to participate.
I was like, oh, what was she gonna come up with next? All right, we'll see if this happens again. All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I feel
all right.
I feel enlightened, so.
Yes. Oh, good. Okay.
You got the generator ready?
I am about to hit run.
Okay.
I don't know why it's called run, but I'm going to run.
Because we're running.
Forest.
Okay. Wait, are we using the word, or are we doing anything kind of forest related?
I think using the word.
Okay.
What do you, yeah.
I
don't know.
I can't remember what
Does
we
that
did
limit
last
it
time.
Too much? I think you were just using the word.
Okay. Well, we can do it. So the word is forest. Tell me when we can.
Yeah. I mean, if you think of something else, just say it. But
okay.
All right.
Well, I'm going to reinforce this rule that we're starting by using only the
right.
word forest.
Run, forest, run.
Oh, come on. That's too easy.
Sorry, I had to say it.
Shoot.
Wow.
It's really tough for us to go forward with this.
I feel like we've deforested this
our options?
Plan. I don't know.
give me a razor. I need to deforest. Don't force this on me. The forest is with you, trees.
Yes.
May the forest be with you.
Exactly.
Good. This is difficult.
Yeah. Gotta force me to stop.
I would never do that.
And I will, because our time is up right now.
Crap.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plantaholics.
Hope you can join us next week for more plant talk.
In the meantime, you can check us out on Instagram and Facebook, or visit our website at plantaholicspodcast.com.
Thanks, everyone.
See you next time.